Welcome to another Sport and Lifestyle Biz here on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio. This week, we have two women who are champions in their sport. We have Alexis Spans, all the way from America, about how she's come back from her ACL injury and started playing college football again. And also Nicola Curry, who's been at the top of her sport as a jockey through a number of years and still keeps her standards very high. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup, and we hope you'll enjoy the show. You'll never stop this, but I will never let you go. Well, who am I to say? Maybe by now you should know. You got your somebody calling, you think you're somebody, don't you? I think you're scared of keeping somebody close. This week with young college superstar soccer player Alexis Spans. Well, everyone, I'm delighted to say back with us today is American footballer Alexis Spans, all the way from Virginia. Hi, Alexis, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Really well, thank you. It's been a couple of months since we last caught up. Your first interview went down really, really well, got a lot of interest, and many are waiting with bated breath to see how you've got on. It was just before you started back playing, so if you could just let us know what it was like to get back on the pitch and how you've done since you started.
Yeah, it felt so good to be back on the pitch. You know, sitting on the sideline for 6 months, it was definitely quite a long time, but it felt like yesterday when I went back on the pitch, I was so excited to be with my teammates and to be training again. You know, definitely I was rusty at the beginning, but putting in the work over multiple months has definitely helped and made me look so much better on the field.
Wonderful. That's lovely to hear. Just going back to the injury quickly, how was your recovery from day one post-op? And how long did it take you to go from operating table to back on the pitch?
I got cleared 8 months into my injury, so it definitely took a long time, but that's kind of the average amount of time that it takes for athletes. It definitely took a lot of work, PT multiple times a week, strength training multiple times a week, but the work that you put in, you definitely see it pay off week in and week out when you're, you know, meeting your goals, whether that is being able to walk down the steps or being able to run a mile. So just having those goals definitely helps get you to being back on the field.
Yeah, fantastic. And 8 months is actually quite good for a recovery period from the injury you had. ACL is very common in female footballers at the moment. And the more I work with, the more I see and hear about girls or women getting this type of injury. So 8 months is very good, but it was quite easy to see that you were quite active on social media and your recovery, you just threw everything into it. Was it actually all the way smooth, or did you have some battles to get back in that 8 months?
Yeah, I definitely had battles, and that's completely normal. I know I contemplated multiple times like giving up soccer and, you know, why did I go through this? Why at this time? But just continuing to look forward and look at the positives and look at what you've accomplished definitely helps. You keep making progression in your recovery. And I think, you know, having a positive mindset and relying on the people around you and your support system definitely will help you get through that.
Yeah, that's a very, very important point to make, actually, was that it's not just the physical, is it, in this recovery? It's actually the mental as well. And trying to keep yourself in as most positive place as possible will obviously help that. And it's important you have a good network around you.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's definitely very mental. And I think it helps videoing yourself, like every, you know, PT session or just little video clips, because then you can look back at it and be like, wow, I really did that. Like, I could barely squat, I could barely walk, and now I'm able to run, and now I'm able to, you know, play my sport again. So definitely looking back where you came, yeah, it motivates me even more, like right now, to keep going.
Do you know what? And that is actually an amazing point you make. I'm helping an 18-year-old that I worked with when she was 11. Just before COVID, she'd done her ACL, and it took her a year to get an operation because of the NHS and everything, because she wasn't actually aligned to a club. She was only 16 at the time. And like you said, she's contemplated a number of times of giving up, but she's asked me to help her try and get back, give it one last shot, as it were. So that's a really good point you make, to actually video the sessions that we do, because it is a positive, isn't it? When you see yourself actually training, and probably sinks in a bit more when you can actually see yourself physically doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a really good point. So thank you for that. We'll go on to obviously much happier times. We spoke about a week or 2 weeks, I think, before your comeback game. Tell us what it felt like to, first of all, get the kit on and know that you were going to play and step out on the field for the first time in 8 months or 10 months.
Yeah, I was super nervous. Like, I've never felt that nervous in my life because, you know, as a soccer player, you play year round. You don't take breaks. You're always playing soccer on vacation or wherever you are. So I was extremely nervous, and that definitely kind of took out a lot of my energy. So within like 30 minutes, I was like, I'm done, coach. Like, but you definitely have to start with, you know, smaller minutes and just work yourself up, because you're not going to be in the shape that you were prior to the injury, but you're definitely going to get back.
Yeah. And how were you during that first game? Was there any, oh, I don't want it to happen again? Or were you sort of just, no, I'm going to throw myself into it?
I kind of just played with no fear. I just went in saying, because I got injured off a non-contact, so no one was around me. So I'm like, if it happens, it happens. But I've done all this work for to strengthen my body, strengthen my legs. So I was going in that I would be fine. And my parents were actually really shocked. They're like, wow, you look this good after 8 months. So I was like, yeah. So
yeah, and that's great, because as I said, just going from social media and speaking to you before, you put an incredible amount of hard work that went into it. And obviously, the harder you work, the more solid you are in your mind that you've done the recovery correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant. And as you said, it was a non-contact injury, so it wasn't like waiting for the first tackle or make your first tackle. That was good. So obviously everything went great. You said all your energy was taken out with nervous energy.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to sort of get back in? Was it sort of in the second game that you relaxed a bit more, or did it take a few weeks?
It definitely took a few weeks. Every game that I played, I got better and better. I would say probably about a month, and then I had a showcase during my 9 month time, and I played really well. So I think it takes, you know, I would say 4 games to get back to being closer to yourself and being less nervous,
which obviously ultimately helps the end performance.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's absolutely great. How has it gone since you come back? How have you progressed? Yeah, how's your gameplay been?
Yeah, it's been really well. We had a showcase a couple months ago, I think maybe 1 or 2 months ago, and I played over 200 minutes in one weekend, which was the most I've played since I've been injured. So it went really well, and I got good feedback after that. And, you know, I've been just putting in the hard work week in and week out, which has led me to getting committed to George Mason. And they, you know, even though I'm not 100%, I'm really close to it. They see the potential in me as a recruit, so they're definitely, you know, gonna bring me on board and just see me through the whole process.
And that's great. And that gives me a great link onto our next topic, which is the fact, as you've just mentioned, you've committed to George Mason University. You'll be playing in D1, which is the top division. Tell us about how that came about and how excited you are for it.
Yeah, I'm super excited for this opportunity. So we have 9 players coming back, and then we have about 19 freshmen coming in. So we're all super excited to, you know, make an impact and kind of change the program around to being, you know, a winning program. It definitely took a lot of hard work, took a lot of emails and phone calls to get me committed, and being persistent. So even when you're injured, definitely, you know, send the coaches emails so they can see, because you could be somebody who, you know, just sits on the couch, doesn't send them anything, but then they don't hear from you for a whole year. But if you send them film and send them emails about how you're doing, that definitely, you know, gets you ahead of the game and gets them to see that you're actually working hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to use your time productively, haven't you? You know, and as you said, you know, it was 8 months, and it probably seemed like forever at times, but it is just 8 months. And the fact you put in so much hard work, the fact you're such a good player, but probably more the fact that you were kept reminding the coaches of this and your commitment. If you hadn't have done it, as you said, it probably would have been somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. So when does all this start? Tell us about what you're looking forward to and what subjects, or, you know, what you're studying and stuff like that.
Okay, so we have preseason August 1st, And our first game is in August. And then we can report and take like summer classes if we want, June 27th. So I'm going to do that so I can get with the strength and conditioning coach and kind of have them see where I'm at and say, okay, you need to work on this. And they can help me throughout the summer. And we receive our like preseason packet. So I'll be working on that where it's like a lot of running and a lot of like technical stuff to get us in shape for preseason. So it's really started now. I'm running, 5 miles a couple times a week, trying to get my endurance back where it was. And I'm super excited to, be part of this new family and kind of experience something new. I'm only 40 minutes down the road. So my parents are like, we won't really miss you. And I'm like, yeah, you'll be able to see me whenever. I'm studying biology and I actually picked classes today. So it's going really well.
That's fabulous. And 40 minutes from home, I mean, that's quite good. That's good, isn't it? That's obviously very close considering the size of America and pretty much where you could have gone.
Exactly. I'm like, team dinner's at my house. Whenever you need dinner, you're homesick, we'll come over here. So.
Oh, that's fabulous to hear and happy that, that's so good for you. So tell us a little bit about George Mason and what you think. You said it's a bit of a building project, where you can see them being in a couple of years.
Yeah, I can see us being like one of the top programs in the country in a couple of years, just because Coach Monty is recruiting girls from like all over the country, and they're really like-minded like me. They want to win. They're ready to put their foot forward and work hard this summer. And we all want playing time, so we're all going to work really hard. George Mason is a medium-sized school. It's located in like Fairfax County, so plenty to do around the school. We have like a mall really close, lots of places to eat, and no football team, which is completely fine, but that means they focus on other sports, which I love. So like soccer is a big sport there and basketball. So, more fans, the better, but I'm super excited.
That's wonderful. And just something you touched on, we obviously, as you know, we try and help girls from the UK get scholarships to play soccer in America. And you touched on there that there was a good mall and eating facilities and that it was really good in the area. That's just as important, isn't it? The fact that, if you do get injured, or also being able to have a social life away from everything, that you choose the right place for you outside of the college.
I agree, and I think that every college is different. What I might be looking for is different than what some, like my friend might be looking for, and that there's a college for everybody.
That's a really good thing. And then one other thing I was going to ask you, Alexis, was just tell us about the D1, and it's sort of a status, isn't it? A stature that you're playing for a D1 team. Tell us a little bit about that and about the conference and where you might be actually traveling to for some of your matches.
Yeah, so we're actually just traveling very close along the East Coast. I don't think too many plane rides. I think we'll probably going by bus, which I love bus rides. Okay. Bus rides as, any athlete is so fun. But I would say like a medium-sized conference. It's the same size as like every other conference.
Yeah.
With schools that are relatively close. Yeah, I think that's it. I don't know.
That's what cool. Do you have set days that you play, or could it be anything?
So I think we play maybe once or twice a week, and then practices for us are from 9 to 11, Tuesdays through Fridays. Right. So it's not too early for the people that don't like waking up early, but I think it's the perfect time.
Yeah, and obviously it doesn't stop for you, does it? Because you've got to fit training, you've got to fit studying in, because you don't want to let your scores drop. So you obviously know the hard work sort of starts here.
Yeah. Definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just before we finish off, and I can't believe where the time has gone already on this, tell us what you hope to achieve. You've got it's a 4-year program, I presume, and you want to come out with your degree and ready to play football or soccer team. Mm-hmm.
My goal is to finish my college strong, and definitely my number one goal is to start as a freshman. So just because I was injured last year doesn't mean I'm sitting on the bench. I'm ready to come out, take people's position that have been on the team previously.
Yeah.
And, kind of make family bonds with the team. That's what I'm hoping, that we're hanging out outside of soccer.
Brilliant. I know how hardworking and how dedicated and how tough you are, which is all important stuff where you... Fortunately for you, you're local, but when you have to go and live away and do have those up and down moments, but I can only see great things for you. And yeah, let's hope you have a safe and a successful season, and we can catch up with you real soon and before you start your semester.
Yeah, sounds great. Perfect. Thank you.
Well, for today, thank you, Alexis. Lovely to speak to you, and we'll catch up soon.
Yep, bye.
Thank you, Alexis. What an amazing interview. We can't wait to do another one very shortly with you about how the few games went since your return. And now, after our first advert break, it's superstar flat jockey Nicola Curry.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, everyone, today I'm joined by superstar British flat jockey Nicola Curry. Hi, Nicola, how are you?
Hi, John, I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely no problem at all. It's my pleasure. It's great to have you on the radio, and you're just on the way back from the races.
Yeah, just on the way back from actually a sunny Wolverhampton, so currently sitting in traffic, but that's the standard for a Friday.
I think you're right. Despite the heatwave, it's not always you can say a sunny Wolverhampton.
No, 9 times out of 10 you can't, so we'll take that today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, as I said, thank you so much for giving your time up for being on the radio. Just want to chat through, really, how you got started, your early career, as you are currently, your plans for the future, and a few other bits surrounding horse racing, if that's okay.
Perfect.
Brilliant. So we'll start off right at the beginning. When did you first realise your love for horses and also racing them?
So horses, it was a very young age. I was from a little island called the Isle of Arran, and that was kind of everybody's hobby. So I think I got my first pony when I was about 6. So I was always into ponies, had my own horses in the island, would go away and compete when I could. I actually first started working in show jumping. So I worked for a couple of show jumpers in the kind of Perth area, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of, I thought I was going to go out and be this top class show jumper, and it's not as easy as that. But anyway, I loved that, and that got me a good base. I mean, I learned a great deal from it.
Yeah.
I actually then went on to Oak Ridge College and done a HNC in equine management. And when I left there, that's when I first started working at Lucinda Russell's.
Right.
That was my first job in racing.
Wonderful. So just a couple of things I can pick out of that, if that's okay. You said that the island of Arran, it's pretty much everybody's hobby is horses. When I say there isn't a lot of Scottish jockeys, you're one of the few. Is that because people have to move to the mainland to go to college and they move on to different things? Or is it just because it is a hobby and that's all it is for people?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of it is just a hobby for people.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to love the industry, and I mean, everybody loves the animals. It's a tough old job to be involved in the equine industry. And I think other people have probably, when they've moved off the island, they've done lots of different things, but they'll go off to uni and they'll just keep the horses as a hobby. Whereas I was always determined that I was going to work with horses, and that was it.
Fantastic. And the other thing was just about the show jumping, which I may come on to a little bit later on when we're talking about your career. Show jumping generally points to national hunt racing, only because of the jumping aspect. Does it help you in more ways than jumping, though? Is it sort of control and discipline of the horse as well?
Yeah, I think it probably just teaches you a lot more about horses, and it's quite good to see the other side of an industry, because, I mean, the show jumping world and the racing world is very, very different. So it certainly opened my eyes, and I certainly learned a lot
those yards, they would deal horses as well. So I was riding all types of horses, from kind of your top class show jumpers to ponies. So
yeah.
I think every little helps, every experience helps.
No, that's fabulous to hear. Thank you. You said you went on to college and then obviously progressed through and started at Lucinda Russell. Lucinda Russell tends to be more known for National Hunt horses. Was that the case when you worked there? And was that the direction you initially were going to take?
Yeah, well, to be honest, being a jockey, it was never in my sights.
Right.
It was actually a good friend of mine was the head girl there, and she said, look, why don't you come? We're looking for staff. I think you would love the racing industry. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go, and I absolutely fell in love with it.
Yeah.
So in my head in that point, I mean, I didn't know the difference between a jump yard and a flat yard, or a flat race and a jump race back then. So it was just the experience of working with the horses, and I just fell in love with it.
Fantastic. You obviously mentioned that you didn't know too much about whether it was a flat or whether it was jumps, and it was your friend that got you into it. You said you fell in love with the industry, which you indicated earlier that was very important. It isn't just glamour, is it, and turning up at the races? It's very hard work, long hours, and sometimes not very thankful work.
It certainly is. Yeah, you got to be tough in this industry. But I just love the aspects of it. You know, you would ride your certain horses every day. Lucinda's yard was great because generally you rode the same horses every day.
Yeah.
But you got to know them so well. You looked after them in the afternoons. Then you would lead them up at the races. And, you know, the buzz of leading up a winner was just, it was second to none. And, you know, the owners would be very thankful that you've ridden the horse for months and it's gone and won a race. It was just a really nice atmosphere.
Brilliant. And you've just hit the nail on the head there about loving the sport. You're obviously a jockey now. And to some, that is the glamour side, even though we'll come on to it isn't. It's still incredibly hard work. But right from the start, you get that buzz just by leading a horse up. And, you know, they become more than sort of pets or work, don't they?
They do, 100%. You know, there was a few specific horses, God, I can even name them now, that I just absolutely fell in love with. I rode them every day. I looked after them every day. I went racing with them. And that's why we do it, you know, for the love of the horses.
Yeah.
So that's why, yeah, and as I say, I fell in love with that. And then it came around, well, do you know what? Maybe I could try and be a jockey. But Lucinda and Skeeter were great with me. They were very patient, because obviously I couldn't hold any horse when I first went there. And I was getting ran away with every day, which they thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
But as I say, they were very patient, and they, you know, they taught me loads and loads. I was schooling every week, riding them up the gallop.
Yeah.
It brought me on as a rider massively.
Brilliant. And you've alluded to Peter Scudamore there. What was it like to learn off, I mean, the great man, multi-time champion?
Yeah, oh, he's such a gentleman. Great to work with and learn from. And, you know, he rode out with us as well. And it was a privilege. And just to learn from those kind of people, you're very lucky. So you've got to be a sponge, soak in everything they say. And, you know, I was lucky to be in that position.
Absolutely, and probably taught you more than just riding, because he had probably the most highly pressured job in the country at one point in the National Hunt field.
For sure. Do you know, you got to learn, and
yeah,
even watching the jockeys at Thunders, do you know, you got to see it is very high pressured, and you've got to remain as level-headed as possible.
Yeah.
Which isn't always easy, but yeah, no, they were great people to learn from.
That's fabulous. And you said that obviously they taught you a lot and you got to ride out the same horses every day and you grew close to them. Was it the fairy tale that you managed to get your first ride either on one of those horses or in that yard, or did it come elsewhere?
It was out of that yard. It wasn't actually a horse I rode every day, but Lucinda was very kind in running one of the jumpers on the flat for me.
Right.
So I had my first ride on Wind Shuffle, and it was round Hamilton, and that was for Lucinda and Skew. So, I mean, that was brilliant. That was really good of them to do that, you know, run one on the flat and let me have my first ride only for them.
Yeah.
That was great.
Oh, that's great. And how did that turn out? Was that a really nice experience?
It was. It was certainly a reality check, you know, fitness-wise, and I certainly got very tired halfway through the race. I think I might have lost an iron as well and managed to get it back without anyone noticing, but it was a reality check I needed, you know. I hadn't been in the industry, you know, that long compared to a lot of people. I hadn't done pony racing, but...
Yeah.
it gave me that kind of kick up the backside to get fitter and actually know I want to do this. So I got to work harder and put my head down, and you have your next ride in your sights. You're just praying that someone else will give you an opportunity.
Yeah, fabulous. An exclusive there then on your first ride, but we won't go on about that too much.
That's it. We'll leave that one hidden away.
Exactly. Well, we go on to your career now. We start talking to about how you've made your name in the public is as a jockey. I'm going to go straight on to 2018, if I may. You gained 81 wins. I mean, what an amazing achievement.
Yeah, it was. I was very lucky. So I rode through my apprenticeship with Richard Hughes.
Yeah.
I mean, who better to be learning from? He was great. We rode, worked with him every day.
Yeah.
And he went through every one of our races. We sat down in the office with him afterwards and he went over it with us.
Wow.
But obviously, because I was late in the industry, it was quite a big pressure for me to ride out my claim.
Right.
By the time I was 25. Otherwise, I was going to turn a claiming professional.
Right.
I really didn't want to do that, so I really had to knuckle down. But thankfully, you know, I had my best season and I was able to ride out my claim.
Brilliant.
In that year. So as enjoyable as it was, there was that pressure that came with it, you know, every winner really, really counted.
And you've got to come so far in such a short time as well since then. Did you find that the work really started almost again when you've worked out the claim? Because obviously you ride, and owners in tight handicaps, they like to take weight off horses for successful apprentices. Did you find that when you'd ridden out that claim, it became even harder for you? Or were you actually given a good opportunity?
No, absolutely it was. That was, again, a big reality check. You know, it's easy. It's still not easy at all, but when you're an apprentice and bringing in winners, it's a lot easier to pick up the rides, especially when you're claiming. As you say, I mean, you're going to jump at the chance to take weight off a horse if you can. But yeah, certainly that first year after losing my claim, that was a big tester. And unfortunately, I just had my biggest winner on Raising Sand that year.
Yeah.
As a professional, and I had an injury, so that's a big setback, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's a real shame. We'll come back on to Raising Sand in a minute. That's really a nice link. But I'd just like to pick up on one thing, if I may, about the claiming.
Yeah.
I know you go down, you go 7, you go 5, you go 3. And I know they say weight stops trains, and the odd pound here tends to matter occasionally. But were you surprised about how much that £3 meant? Because you tend to find that if you get on with a horse and you win a race, usually the £3 might not have that much effect all the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, for sure, and you're totally right. You know, I was lucky to ride some good horses when I had the £3, and I was lucky to keep the ride on them afterwards. When I did turn professional, when you have that bond with a horse, it's very good.
Yeah.
And obviously a trainer would probably rather someone that knew the horse inside out than someone else. But yeah, I mean, the £3 is just, you'd beg to have it back now, put it that way.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. So we'll link on to Raising Sand, if we may, because I still remember, he still runs. He loves Ascot. He loves soft ground as well. He enabled you to become the first female jockey to ride in the QE2, which is held at Ascot, which is Europe's richest mile race, or it was at the time. What was it like to go out there, level playing field, on a horse in a massive Group 1 race like that?
It was absolutely fantastic, and I think because I knew the horse and there'd been a bit of a story behind it, it was a privilege, and it was just such a buzz, and it made you hungrier to ride in those big races as much as you could, and he was an absolute flag bearer for my career, so I'm forever thankful for him. He gets a pat every time I'm in the yard, that's for sure. But yeah, that was an amazing moment in my career, to have that opportunity to ride in a race like that. And on a horse that had done that for my career, it was fantastic.
And also amazing from the trainers and owners, really. I know we've said loyalty for me in life and everything, loyalty is a massive part of it. But they could have been easy to perhaps follow the trend, or they probably got people in their ear saying, oh, it's a Group 1. It was amazing of them, obviously, to keep you on board for the race.
Absolutely. Like the Nick Bradley team, we first partnered up together with Raising Sand, and I've ridden them winners since, and they're a great syndicate. And obviously for Jamie Osborne I'm sure he would have pushed them as well to allow me to keep the ride on him. So no, I couldn't have thanked them enough, that's for sure.
And Jamie, would you say, was one of the first people to push women in top flight racing as jockeys?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I left Richard Hughes's once and ridden my claim out, Jamie Osborne actually offered me the stable jockey job, and I was with him for a good number of years, and we had plenty winners together. And you know, back then it wasn't a big thing for a yard to have a female stable jockey.
Yeah.
Obviously things are getting better now, and you know, you've got Holly Doyle with Archie Watson, and but yeah, he took a chance on me, and I'd previously worked for him beforehand, so he knew me, I knew him, and we had a lot of winners together, so that was great, and I'm still connected with him now.
Yeah, brilliant. I noticed you've ridden for him the last couple of days, or in one of the last couple of days. Just something else I wanted to just touch on regarding that. Were you sort of a role model for his daughter, Safi, who I know rides as well for him? We call it a pathway in football for the girls we coach. Were you sort of her pathway?
I think you could say that. I think you would have to ask her that question as well. But I think certainly it would have made things slightly easier. Do you know, just with certain owners, some of the old school owners are still would kind of be a bit wary of putting a female up.
Yeah.
And I think with me having that job and certainly riding for all of Jamie's owners at that time,
yes,
so it wasn't such a big thing when then Safi came through. I mean, obviously she's proved herself as a very capable rider, but it probably helped.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Thank you, Nicola. What a brilliant interview. And after our final advert break, it's our SLB Sports Roundup.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is our SLB Sports Roundup, featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, rugby, motorsport, football, NBA and NFL. We start with golf, and the PGA Tour held the OHL Classic from the El Chameleon Golf Course in Playa del Carmen in Mexico. It was won with -23 score by Russell Henley, beating Brian Harman by 4 shots with a 3-way tie for third. Joel Doman, Seamus Power and Scotty Scheffler, now the world number 2, who did a -9 under par for the final round to finish on -18 but 5 shots back. This week it's the Houston Open from the Memorial Park Golf Course in Texas. The DP World Tour had a postponed tournament last week, but they're back this weekend with a Ned Bank Challenge from the Gary Player Golf Course in South Africa. The LPGA held the Toto Japan Classic from the Sita Golf Course in Shiga using the North Course. It was won, a first-time win for Gemma Driver from Scotland. She finished on -20, 4 shots clear of Karna Nagai on -16. One further back to Lynn Grant of Sweden on -15. This week it's the Pelican Women's Championship from the Pelican Golf Course in Colorado. Horse racing. Last weekend held the World Championships of Racing in America from Keeneland. It was the Breeders' Cup, and the horse highlighted Flightline, the best horse on the planet, did not disappoint, sitting a close second to a very fast pace and lengths clear of the remaining pack. He passed the leader, turned into the home straight, and was hands and heels all the way to the line before being eased down for a brilliant 8 1/4 length victory. An unbelievable performance, and didn't disappoint. Other great performances, we mentioned William Buick. Well, he had 2 winners and it's 2 seconds. Magical Mischief and Modern Games were his 2 winners. Silver Knot, his best second. And then Ryan Moore, 3 winners for the brilliant English jockey. Mediate, Victoria Road and Tuesday, all for Aidan O'Brien, with Mediate and Tuesday being highlighted by us. And a second on Stone Age. Holly Doyle, she travelled from Japan, our good friend. She was very unlucky. The Platinum Queen was drawn out of the race with a wide berth in 12. And Nashua, the filly just missed the break but stayed on stoutly for a good place. One story to hit the heartstrings was Cody's Wish. A massive horse who made a connection with a special little boy, Cody Dorman, who's 16 years old and suffers from a rare genetic disease, Wolf-Hirschman syndrome. Well, the horse, when he was a foal, walked over and placed his head on this young little boy's lap. In his wheelchair, the horse got off to a terrible start, losing his first three races, and the little boy said through his speech, "I think I need to be there." He went for the next race, the horse won, and is unbeaten since. Well, he brought the house down and had the tears flowing with a brilliant win in the Dirt Mile. Cody's Wish, follow this horse, he can only improve, he's a big gross horse. What a star, what a story. Back to England and the National Hunt. Two big winners for us this weekend at Wincanton, with Frodon and Nappers Hill winning the big races. The Badger Beers Gold Cup was won by Frodon under Bryony Frost. Nappers Hill won the Elite Hurdle under Harry Cobden, both trained by the man in form, Paul Nichols. El Dancer, another winner for Sam Thomas and Charlie Deutsch, who we follow, won the Grand Sefton Chase over the Grand National Fences at Aintree. And Meteor, top class hurdler, won the November Handicap on the flat at Doncaster. This weekend, the Paddy Power Gold Cup. We've already given you three to follow, and we stand by these three. G.A. Law, Stolen Silver, and Il Redito. However, there's been a late entry. French Dynamite from the Mouse Morris Yard in Ireland, who won with a 2-mile-7 hurdle victory on his debut. He could be good for the race. We like to stick with who we've got. And then the Greatwood Hurdle, Songino, Dad's Lad, if they take part, and Nappers Hill may be rerouted after last weekend's win, also look for him. He can carry the weight and he's in great form. The 19th of November, as we've said before, is the Betfair Chase from Haydock. Look at Aplutar to put his Gold Cup winning performance, not behind him, but enhance that for a follow-up this year with a win in the Betfair Chase. But Royal Pagal, if the ground's really heavy, may give him something to think about. He loves heavy ground, he loves Haydock, and he loves the 3-mile trip. The 26th of November sees a Coral Gold Cup, and we're going to put four up for you to look at. Dusart, Our Power, Corrie Grambler, and our old favourite, Fiddler on the Roof. On to cricket. The T20 World Cup comes to the culmination of the tournament, and it's the semi-finals. New Zealand play Pakistan, and England face India. Australia didn't make it, but that's because New Zealand and England played well enough to get through. India and Pakistan qualified from their group, although Pakistan were a little bit lucky. South Africa done their normal and flopped right at the end when they had to beat just Holland to qualify for the semis. On to rugby, and the Women's World Cup final again features England against New Zealand. England running out 26-19 winners over Canada in their semi-final, and New Zealand pipping the French 25-24. On to motorsport. The MotoGP wound up its season with Alex Rins taking the race at Valencia on his Suzuki X-Star. Brad Binder was second on the KTM and Jorge Martin was third for Ducati Pramac Racing. Fabio Quartararo, who led the season for so long, but his Monster Energy Yamaha just ran out of speed in the second half of the season, ran a great race at another strong Ducati track and finished fourth, while Frankie Bagnaia took it easy. The Valentino Rossi prodigy finished 8th, but it was more than enough. He only had to finish in the top 13. And that's if Fabio Quartararo won the race. Well, it didn't happen, and Frankie Bagnaia becomes world champion for the Ducati Lenovo team. He scored 265 points over the season. Second place, Fabio Quartararo, Monster Energy Yamaha on 248. And third place, grabbing that bronze medal in the final race, Enea Bastianini for Ducati Gresini Racing. He will become Frankie Bagnaia's teammate at Ducati Lenovo next season, replacing Jack Miller. He had 219. But a shout out to Alexis Espargaro, who overperformed all season on the Aprilia and finished fourth on 212. World Superbikes are back this week with the penultimate round of the season. They're going to Indonesia for the Indonesian round at the street circuit in Mandalika. Alvaro Bautista, riding the Ducati Aruba IT machine, has pretty much wrapped it up. He's on 507 points. He's 82 points clear of Toprak Ratsakalioglu, the current champion. Took a long while to get started this season, but he's closed the gap, but not enough for the brilliant Bautista. He rides for Team Yamaha, and Jonathan Ray, six-time world champion for Team Kawasaki, is back in third on 409. As we said, just two rounds to go, and it looks like the championship will be Alvaro's. NASCAR and the Cup Series Championship. The final round of the season was held at Phoenix Raceway, and the race was won by Joey Logano, Ford Mustang Team Penske. Second place, Ryan Blaney, also Ford Mustang Team Penske. Third place, Ross Chastain, driving the Chevy Camaro for Trackhouse Racing, stopping a 1-2-3 for Ford, who also had Chase Briscoe in fourth, but he drives for Stuart Huss. The Series Cup round of four final standings. The win meant another championship for Joey Logano. He finished on 5,040 points. Second place, Ross Chastain, just 6 points behind on 5,034. Christopher Bell was third. Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing, 5,027. And Chase Elliott was fourth, driving the Chevy Camaro, Hendrix Racing, on 5,009. Well, this gives Joey Logano his second championship. Ross Chastain was so close in the fastest car, but couldn't find a way to close down the front two. A win would have seen him win the championship. And Christopher Bell had every chance, but a final pit stop where his back wheel change man got his hand stuck in the wheel and delayed the pit stop saw Christopher Bell out the race. He lost 11 spaces at that stop, but he still finished a very creditable third. Formula One is back this week with the Brazilian Grand Prix from the Autodrome Juan Carlos Pace, a favourite track of Lewis Hamilton. Can he and Mercedes win their first race of the season? Otherwise, I can only see it being another win for Max Verstappen, who has already won the Drivers' Championship on 416 points. Second place is teammate Sergio Perez on 280, with five back to Charles Leclerc in third on 275. Red Bull lead the standings and have also won the Constructors on 696. Ferrari a second on 487, with now just 40 back to the ever-improving Mercedes. Can they close the Ferrari gap down in the last two races? We move on to football, and the Premier League was back with week 15 of the season. The results: Nottingham Forest 2, Brentford 2, Wolves 2, Brighton 3, Manchester City 2, Fulham 1, Leeds 4, Bournemouth 3, in a brilliant comeback by the Yorkshire men, who were 3-1 down with 30 minutes to go. Everton 0, Leicester 2, Chelsea 0, Arsenal 1 in the game of the weekend, and another brilliant performance by Arsenal, keeping them at the top of the league. Aston Villa 3, Manchester United 1, another one of those days at the office for Manchester United, but Aston Villa was certainly buoyed by the new manager syndrome, having sacked Steven Gerrard and bringing in the excellent Unai Emery. Southampton 1, Newcastle 4, a brilliant push still going by Newcastle, who move into third. West Ham 1, Crystal Palace 2, and Tottenham 1, Liverpool 2. The top six places in the league: Arsenal are top, played 13 with 34 points. Manchester City are second, also played 13 with 32 points. And Newcastle are third, played 14, 27 points. Tottenham are in fourth, also played 14 with 26 points. Manchester United are fifth, played 13 with 23 points. And sixth place are Brighton, played 13 and 21 points. Match day 16 fixtures: Manchester City versus Brentford, Liverpool versus Southampton, Bournemouth versus Everton, West Ham versus Leicester, Tottenham versus Leeds, Nottingham Forest versus Crystal Palace, Newcastle versus Chelsea, Wolverhampton versus Arsenal, Brighton versus Aston Villa, and Fulham versus Manchester United. The WSL had week 7, and the results were Reading 0, Manchester City 3, Liverpool 0, Aston Villa 1, Tottenham versus Everton was postponed due to a waterlogged pitch, Leicester 0, Arsenal 4, West Ham 4, Brighton 5 in an amazing game, Manchester United 1, Chelsea 3. Poor result for Manchester United, although Chelsea are amazing. One bright spot was the return from injury of Alessio Russo, who bagged a goal. The top three in the league: Arsenal were top, played 6, 18 points, goal difference of 17. Chelsea are second, played 7, also 18 points, goal difference of 11. And Manchester United played 6, points of 15, sitting third place. Matchday 8. Fixtures are on the 19th and the 20th of November: Everton versus Manchester City, Arsenal versus Manchester United, Chelsea versus Tottenham, Aston Villa versus Reading, Brighton versus Liverpool, and West Ham versus Leicester. On to NBA, and in the East, we'll bring you some results of some tracked teams for us. The Bucks beat the Pistons 116-91, and then beat the Thunder 108-94. The Cavs beat the Pistons 112-88, and the Lakers 114-100. The Nets beat the Wizards 128-86, and then the Hornets 98-94. The Hawks beat the Pelicans 124-121. The Knicks beat the 76ers 106-104 and then lost to the Celtics 118-133. And the Raptors beat the Spurs 143-100. They lost to the Mavericks 110-111. And then beat the Bulls 113-104. In the West, Golden State Warriors lost to the Mavericks 129-130. They also lost to the Pelicans 105-114. And are now on a 6-game losing streak. Yes, the Golden Warriors are on a 6-game losing streak. The Suns lost to the Trailblazers 106-108, but then overturned that against the same team 102-82. The Jazz lost to the Mavericks 100-103, beat the Lakers 130-116, lost to the Cavaliers 100-114, but then beat the Clippers 110-102. The Grizzlies beat the Wizards 103-97, and then beat the Hornets 130-99. The Lakers beat the Pelicans 120-117, but then lost to the Jazz 116-130. The Clippers beat the Rockets 109-101. They beat the Spurs 113-106, but they lost to the Jazz 102-110. The top 8 places in the conferences, the East. The Bucks are unbelievable. They are 9-0, closely followed by the Cavaliers, who are 8-1. The Celtics and the Hawks are joint 3rd on 6-3. The Raptors are 5th on 6-4. The Bulls are 6th on 5-6. And the Pacers and the Knicks are joint 7th on 4-5. In the West, the Suns lead the way on 7-2. The Jazz are 2nd, 8-3. Closely followed by the Grizzlies on 7-3. Joint 4 for the Trailblazers and the Nuggets on 6-3. And 6th place are the Mavericks on 5-3. 7th place are the Pelicans on 5-4. And then 3 tied for 8th, the Clippers, the Spurs and the Timberwolves on 5-5. This week, some highlighted fixtures. 76ers face the Suns. Hawks play the Bucks. Bulls play the Raptors. Grizzlies play the Celtics. Timberwolves play the Knicks. Mavericks play the Nets. Golden State Warriors play the Kings. Jazz play the Lakers. Clippers versus the Cavs. Hawks versus the Jazz, Nets versus the Knicks, and the Thunder play the Bucks. Timberwolves versus the Suns, Spurs versus the Grizzlies, Clippers versus the Lakers in the LA Derby, and the Kings play the Cavaliers. Hawks play the 76ers, Magic play the Suns, Knicks play the Pistons, Spurs play the Bucks, Golden State Warriors play the Cavaliers, Lakers play the Kings, Clippers versus the Nets, Knicks versus the Thunder, Cavaliers versus the Timberwolves, Lakers versus the Nets, Heat versus the Suns, and the Bucks play the Hawks in one of the top of the table clashes in the East. We finish off with NFL. Last week's result we needed to bring you was Browns 32, Bengals 13. Week 9 results, Texans 17, Eagles 29, Patriots 26, Colts 3, Lions 15, Packers 9. The Packers can't even beat the team with the worst record in the league, although the Lions have now stepped away from that and are 2-7. Falcons 17, Chargers 20, Jets 20, Bills 19. A surprise reversal from the Bills, although the Jets are doing well, but they fought from behind in great style. Commanders 17, Vikings 20, Bengals 42, Panthers 21, Jaguars 27, Raiders 20, Bears 32, Dolphins 35, Cardinals 21, Seahawks 31, Bucks 16, Rams 13, Chiefs 20, Titans 17, and results bring you next week is the Saints versus the Ravens. In the AFC, the Bills and the Chiefs lead the way on 6-2, and the Texans are holding everybody up on 1-6-1. In the East, the Bills, as I said, 6-2, but the Jets and the Dolphins deserve great mentions in the best division in that conference. They're both on 6-3. The Chiefs lead the way in the West on 6-2, and the Ravens lead the way in the North on 5-3. The Titans are also on 5-3 and lead the way in the South, which is also the division of those Texans on 1-6-1. In the NFC, it's the Eagles with an unblemished 100% 8-0 record, closely followed by the Vikings on 7-1. And the Panthers are the ones holding everybody up on 2-7. Well, the East is led by those Eagles who are 8-0. But some great shout-outs as well for the Cowboys and the Giants who are 6-2. And that would lead many other divisions. The West see the Seahawks out in front on 6-3. And the North is being dominated by the Vikings on 7-1. The South is being led by the Bucks and the Falcons, who are 4-5, the only division that is being led with a negative aggregate. As we said, that's why the Giants and the Cowboys deserve a shout-out. And the Panthers are also in that South on 2-7. Weekday 10 fixtures. Panthers versus Falcons. Buccaneers versus Seahawks, Bears versus the Lions, Dolphins versus the Browns, Titans versus the Broncos, Bills versus the Vikings in probably the game of the week, Giants versus the Texans, Chiefs versus the Jaguars, Steelers versus the Saints, Raiders versus the Colts, Rams versus the Cardinals, Packers go to Dallas to face the Cowboys, 49ers versus the Chargers, and the unbeaten Eagles go to Washington to take on the Commanders. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Everybody, that's the end of another brilliant, brilliant show full of great interviews and top sporting results. I'd like to thank Alexis Spans all the way from America. I'd also like to thank Nicola Curry for her interview about how she's been at the top level for such a long time and how she got into racing. And I'd also like to thank you, the listeners. We hope we keep you entertained and we always appreciate you tuning in. And finally, to Johan, Rafaela, and the team at UK Health Radio for the amazing platform we're given every week. We'll see you all next week. Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. And the world, I'm turning inside out. Yeah. I'm floating around in ecstasy. So don't stop.
A ball. Don't stop me now. If you wanna have a good time.